This is Matt Wells at UN News. Twice president of Chile, the trained paediatrician and former political prisoner, Michelle Bachelet is now UN Human Rights Chief and promising to raise her voice for women and the vulnerable across the world. In her early life, she was detained and tortured under the Chilean dictatorship and later worked as head of the medical department for an NGO helping child torture survivors. She sat down a few weeks ago for her first in-depth interview with UN News. Laura Quinones began by asking her how she overcame the horror of what happened to her.
Well, I think that for one hand, probably because in my family as a child, I have a very caring and loving environment. So my mom and me are very resilient, if I may say, because I think that helps a lot. But the second thing, I mean, there was a period of my life that I really hated what was happening. I had so much rage. But afterwards, I started thinking, you know what, I don't want this to happen anymore in Chile and in no other country of the world. So what can I do to contribute that Chile will be a peaceful, democratic society? So sort of I put all my energies on that. And that's why I studied defense issues, to be able to speak to the militaries, because I never thought I was going to be Minister of Defense or President of the Republic. So I said, they understand the full power. I will have the power of knowledge to be able to be a counterpart and discussing this issue. So, and then we were building, you know, a process of reconciliation and saying, look, we might not never be in agreement with what happened in the past, but we all love the nation. We need to ensure that the future of the democracy of the, and the nation is not in danger. So I would say it permitted me to understand that, first of all, lessons learned. And if you really want some objective and in a positive or constructive way, it can be done.
Now, as a High Commissioner, you have come in a time when human rights are under serious attack all over the world. Have you had time to think through what are your priorities going to be in this job?
First of all, of course, my priorities is to do what my mandate tells me to do, to be the voice of the voiceless, but also to engage governments so they respect human rights, protect people from violation of human rights, and promote human rights. But some countries, it's not a state policy to not being able to do the right thing, but because they don't have the institutional capacity. So one of the tasks of the office is to do capacity building, and many countries have asked us to support their judiciary system so it will be independent, or the police forces to understand, or armed forces to understand the importance of, you know, to deal with issue respecting human rights and international laws, and also technical cooperation. But we also, anyway, we monitor and report issues when we receive allegations from different parts. But one of my particular priorities is for the Secretary General is also very important, and that is prevention. I'm not saying I will succeed on that, maybe not, but I will try to design a system where we can have really early warning signs and try to think on early action. And of course, I will work with member states to support and engage them in this task of promoting protecting human rights. And that sense also with intergovernmental bodies like the Human Rights Council, and also, of course, with the treaties and all the special procedures and all the human rights mechanisms that the UN has.
And to build on that, some countries right now don't really want to cooperate with your office. Others question the worth of the Human Rights Council. How do you plan on bringing everyone together?
Well, in my opening statement, I spoke about that consensus could be possible, that we shouldn't lose ourselves in sterile disputes. I know, but of course, human rights is a very political thing. But on the other hand, and you see that here in General Assembly, you see it in the Security Council, so it's not in the Human Rights Council by itself. Countries have their visions, their interests, and sometimes they are not interested in some issues. But what I've been doing is meeting with not only with the whole council, but with groups of countries in Geneva that represent the GRULAC, that the Latin American Caribbean countries, the African countries, the Arab countries, the Asia-Pacific countries, the West European and other countries, the Eastern European countries, speaking but also listening, you know? Because sometimes you know what you have to do, but the way you do it can be more successful than others. Sometimes you need to speak out. Sometimes you need to strategize in terms of saying, look, it will work better if we do diplomatic prevention, if we start engaging the government. But today the world is complicated and it's very polarized in some issues. So I'll do my best and I hope I succeed. But anyway, the Human Rights Council, it's also in a process of reforming itself. They have defined that they want to be more effective and efficient. And the Office of the High Commissioner provides sort of the secretariat to them. So we'll support the efforts in improving their results and outcomes. But at the end, it's a political issue. So we'll work very hard and we hope we get important outcomes for that.
This year is the 70th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We know there's still a lot to do, but what progress do you think has been done in the past 70 years?
I think there has been a lot of progress, and it's difficult to believe because every time you just put the television, you look up all the awful things that are there. And that is also true. I mean, but there has been progress. I have to think on 1948, how many countries women could vote, for example, how many people could be respected their freedom of speech. I mean, if you think of the different aspects of the human rights, even in more concrete things that usually people don't think as human rights, but they are human rights, on health, on education, on sanitation, on housing. I mean, the world today is better than 70 years ago. But having said that, there's a lot of threats. There are a lot of threats for multilateralism. There's a lot of threat and pushback on human rights. It used to be for all, universal human rights, the three pillars, peace and security, development, and human rights. And we see a pushback. We see a pushback. We see that in some document, human rights is not mentioned. And when you ask, they say it's mainstream. And if it's mainstream, fantastic, because everybody's doing his job. But if it's invisible, mainstream, that's not a good thing. But on the other hand, we see that human rights defenders, for example, in many places and civil society, their spaces are shrinking. They have been under attack. Journalists have been killed. So there's a lot of challenges. I mean, the only thing I can say is that the struggle for human rights probably will never end, because it's a process where you advance, but there will be always people who want to push back. And that could be governments, that could be armed groups, you know, irregular armed groups. It could be. And that the task of the UN is to ensure and promote the whole system, human rights. And I'll do what I have to do about it. But it cannot be only the task of the Office of the High Commission of Human Rights. It has to be the task of the whole UN system.
And related to what we were saying, I'd like to ask you about protecting those who protect. Human rights defenders are often targets of abuse and violence, just as journalists, as you mentioned. How can human rights defenders be better protected by the states?
Well, the curious thing is that as we are celebrating the 70th year of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, we are celebrating 20 years of the Declaration of Protection of Human Rights Defenders. And last year, in November 2017, a resolution on protection of human rights defenders was approved unanimously by the Global Assembly, for the General Assembly. Every country, no country voted against it. So the issue is, today I mentioned in another panel, you know, in paper things can look very good, but reality is another thing. So I think we have the task of making accountable people for the things they have approved. Second, be more monitoring implementation of those agreements that everybody has, and engage governments on those. And in the cases where things are happening, making them accountable and responsible for the killings, the torture, the detentions of many human rights defenders.
Syria has been in our radar screens for 7 years, and the abuses continue. What is being done to make sure that justice prevails in the long run?
There is a discussion now among the member states of the UN, because Syria, of course, wants to rebuild its country, reconstruct it. And of course, there's a lot of discussion among the Security Council and others, under which circumstances, and donors particularly, which circumstances they will be needed to develop in the country to put money on the reconstruction. So I think there is sort of conversations going on. And I don't know, but we have, of course, said that in any process of peace agreements or end of war, or end of conflict, the international experience shows that it's more sustainable, more durable, when you have accountability processes, either transitional justice, when there is access to justice and perpetrators are making responsible or accountable for the things they have done.
And actually, this is not on my list, but I'd like to ask you, you've been like a very, very important defender of women's rights. How is that going to continue being a high commissioner?
People tend to see the office of the high commissioner like only concerned with political and civil rights, and that's not it. I mean, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights clearly states the freedom of for migrants, freedom of health, I mean, the right of health, the right of education. I mean, it's very comprehensive. And even though the rights of children, the rights of women, even though I'm not intending to replace any other agency, on one hand, on my words, I always speak about gender issues, gender empowerment. Today in the morning, I was speaking about women who were defenders of women's rights that have been particularly attacked, even with threats of rape, sexual assault, etc. So I will be always raising the voice for women, trying to support their capacities as the organization, and building partnership with UN Women. As we have spoken with Henrietta, to build partnership with UNICEF to see how we can create synergies. I mean, I'm not going to replace none of them. I'm not going to step on no one's toes. That's not my attitude in life. But I do believe in partnership. I do believe we can sort of think on what thing we can do together.
One of the most pressing issues for the entire world is climate change. How are human rights linked to the environment?
Very important, first of all, because if we are not able to stop climate change, the people who will be more vulnerable and will suffer more are the poorest, and the women and the children and the vulnerable ones. And they're going to have access to water. They're going to have access to crops and to have agriculture and to have food. They're going to, many of them, for example, small islands, if the sea rise, they will have to leave the island. They will have to go somewhere as a migrant. So, I mean, there's so many concrete consequences that will be affecting people's life and their rights. So that's why we also believe that to work strongly to combat climate change is a very essential task, also the High Commissioner. Of course, and I think also that we need to be more part of the 2030 agenda, how we support the SDGs, because I know that's not all, but the idea of advancing by 2030 and not leaving anyone behind, it means at the end to have human rights respected throughout the world. So, and climate change, it is a huge importance, because I've seen places where there's no more water. There were people who live in agriculture and mainly were women, and now they have to think how they get their incomes. With climate change, we have seen, I mean, maybe some scientists can tell us not so directly, but we have been seeing all kinds of earthquakes and volcanoes and all kinds of things in an unusual magnitude and immense forest fires, etc. So, and all of those will make a lot of consequences for the life of people. It's very important to work very closely on that too. And I completely agree with Secretary General that said that this is one of the major challenges that we have.